Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of The Classical Scene. I'm Victor Halls, and I'm very pleased to have a special guest with me today, Maestro Mark Sforzini. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Victor. Great to be here today.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, as probably many of you know, Mark conducts both the Tampa Bay Symphony and was the founder and conductor of the St. Pete Opera, and I'm very pleased to be performing cello with the St. Pete Opera production of Carmen. It's happening these first couple of weeks in June, and I'll give information about when all of those concerts are. So today is an opportunity to get to know Mark a little bit, hear about that music, and beyond. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself as conductor, instrumentalist, and what living in St. Pete has been like for you?
Sure. Well, as I think you're aware, Victor, I came to Tampa Bay in 1992 as the principal bassoonist of the Florida Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed playing for 15 seasons with the Florida Orchestra before my career kind of took a turn more towards conducting. And I started conducting opera in St. Petersburg in 2005 with the production of Madama Butterfly, and in early 2007 officially formed the St. Petersburg Opera Company. And this production of Carmen will be concluding our 19th season.
Wow, bravo. That's terrific. And I'm very pleased to have performed in one of them before. Last season I played in Puccini's Turandot, and Puccini's music is so luscious and wonderful. I saw that among the dozens and dozens of operas that you all have performed, at least 5 or 6 by Puccini are among them.
We've hit all the major Puccinis. I'm a huge fan of Puccini and a big fan of all the big Puccini operas. In fact, our 20th season next year will close with La Bohème.
Excellent. And so what has this season contained?
Sure. So we opened this season with another French opera, Samson and Delilah, and that was exciting. We had an amazing cast. We were heading towards opening night, and Hurricane Helene came through, and we had to cancel our final dress rehearsal, and also because of the hurricane and the timing, we had to cancel opening night. Aww. But we were still able to put on our Sunday matinee and final Tuesday performance. So we were all apart for over 5 days, but everybody came together for the Sunday matinee and really gave a fantastic performance of that. Mm. And every November, we do a children's opera. So in November, we did our children's opera, Pinocchio.
That's right. I hear that's a delightful thing.
And we'll be repeating that in our 20th season again. It's a project we do in collaboration with the Pinellas County School Systems. Oh. And in advance of the third graders being field tripped to our Opera Central building to see Pinocchio, we go into 12 different elementary schools and we present to them about opera. It's really their first introduction to opera and what it is. And so we do these preparatory sessions, and then they are field tripped to the opera building to see the 1-hour show Pinocchio. And that's in November. And we did our big holiday show this year, and we'll repeat that also next December as well, Holiday Sparkle. And our last main stage opera this current season was in March. We did a little Night Music by Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, very fun music. I've played some Sondheim. Never a complete show of his, but I bet that was wonderful.
I'm a big Sondheim fan. We've done Sweeney Todd. We've done Into the Woods twice. Okay. We've done Putting It Together. This was our second production of A Little Night Music. So I find, you know, some of his shows are rather operatic in quality and lend themselves well to being produced by an opera company.
Hmm. Excellent. Yes. And then that brings us to our current production, which will be performing on, what is it, June 6th and 8th and 10th and 13th and 15th. And that is Bizet's Carmen, which I'm so excited about because it's really one of the classic examples of great opera.
Yeah. And in the history of our company, prior to the pandemic, you know, which closed everything down in March 2020, we had done a few shows where we had done five performances instead of three because of the demand for the tickets and the popularity of the shows. And this is the first time since the pandemic that we've decided to do five performances of something again. And they are selling very well, so I encourage people to get their tickets sooner rather than later.
That's excellent to hear. So glad.
And it's our this is our third production of Carmen. We did our first production in 2010, and then we repeated it in 2015. So it's been 10 years since we put on a Carmen. That's really exciting. It's a grand opera, and of course it has a big fabulous orchestra, but we have a chorus of 33 adults. We have a youth chorus of 12, and of course there's 10 in the cast. And so, you know, at one time, I guess you're talking about there's going to be something like 90 people on stage at once.
That's amazing. Will we be behind the set again?
The orchestra, as often is the case, is located behind the set.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a system. I mean, it's basically how we've been doing operas since I started conducting opera in the Palladium, because there isn't a pit. But
right.
I think we've really made a special art form out of making that work and achieving excellent balance and ensemble. Mm-hmm. And high-tech cameras and monitors and things. The singers can view me on three different monitors that are in the house. So, they're able to watch me. And, of course, they hear the orchestra very well, because the orchestra is really just literally coming from behind them, which in some ways it can have its advantages over if there's a pit and then you're on stage and you're way upstage. You know, sometimes it can actually be hard to hear the orchestra.
That's right, because the music – that all of the sound from the orchestra is going up and out and not much back at you.
Right.
And so you're
right.
Really dependent on the conductor bringing everyone together. So what a luxury for our singers here.
I feel like it's,
sound.
It's a nice, the acoustic's a nice wet acoustic in there. So it's really nice to sing in there. And like you're in front of the orchestra. So the voices, you're really just riding the sound of the orchestra out into the theater.
That's right. The Palladium Theater is a beautiful space to perform. I've done so in many different formats, both small ensembles, small orchestras, big orchestras, and operas, and seen other performances there. It's really a gem in this neighborhood, I'd say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, of course, Carmen is this piece about a fiery damsel named Carmen. Everybody will probably recognize this music right away. This is one of the times we first meet her in the piece, I believe, right? We have a little...
This must be the habanera.
Exactly. Here she comes. And the chorus adding their comment. Really held out those notes a long time, didn't she?
Well, when you're Carmen, you want to do things the way you want to do them.
Absolutely. It is all about you. Absolutely. And that recording was made by the Paris National Opera Orchestra.
Was that Maria Callas?
Georges Prieta. It was, in fact, Maria Callas.
I thought I recognized her voice.
Yes, she has that distinctive
vibrato
and clarity to her voice. It's so beautiful. So that's, of course, one very recognizable piece from this opera, but there's so much more great stuff in it. Everybody has to come out and check it out. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to be playing it with a couple of other cellists from the Florida Orchestra, David Bender, a newer member, and Fred Grotta, who's played a lot of opera or St. Pete Opera performances as well. And the three of us, I think, are a really good little team back there.
Yeah. Fred has been playing the operas since I started conducting them in St. Pete in 2005. So he's played on almost every single opera we've done here.
That's what a great friendship there. I asked him how much he'd played Carmen. He said, oh, a lot, which is just great. I've played the selections from it, of course. We have those famous orchestral suites. We even played some of them at the Florida Orchestra recently with Keitaro Harada. It was a wonderful concert. But to do the entire piece.
Will this be your first time doing the entire opera?
It is.
That's exciting.
Yes, I love it. So we've begun our orchestral rehearsals. I think they've gone quite well. And the singers and the cast have been rehearsing for quite a while, right? How long is that process to get everyone ready for showtime?
I think, if I'm thinking back, I believe the principal cast started on May 14th. So they started May 14th, opening night's June 6th. So that gives you a sense of the timeline.
Okay.
And I usually spend the first couple of days rehearsing the music with the cast, and then the staging rehearsals start. Last night, which was Wednesday night, we had our final room run at our opera building where we go through the entire opera with everybody, but it's at our building on the taped out floor. You know, it's not at the in the theater. And so tomorrow we're moving into the theater for Tech Week, and we'll start putting it all together there. Yeah, I just came from the theater, and the set is looking really good, really impressive.
Excellent. And yes, what is your set going to look like? What is the storyline behind it? Because this opera was set in a kind of distant village in Seville, Spain from 1820s, I believe, right? So what's yours?
Well, it's a unit set that's in that style and time period, and you know, it's kind of an elevated structure that has an upper second level, and you get the impression that there's a cigarette factory over here, but then it can also function in the final scene with the crowd up on the upper level as if they're watching the bullfight in the arena, and Carmen and Don Jose are outside the arena having their own altercation. It functions very nicely, I think.
Yeah. Cool. Would you like to talk some more about the storyline of the opera and give people a little preparatory synopsis of it at all? And because I've seen that as part of your duties with St. Pete Opera, you also do these things called mornings with the maestro.
Right.
So what do you do in those?
So I have one of those coming up tomorrow morning, as a matter of fact. So I will be pointing out different things to listen to in the music. I'll give basic backstory about the opera, and I'll point out different themes and motifs to listen for in the opera. Bizet did use light motifs, and of course, Carmen is famous for the fate motif. This dee-dee-ah-dee-dum, dee-ah-da-dee-um.
That's right. Yeah. And we cellos get to play that quite a bit, and we bare our souls during it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, he uses that motif throughout the opera. He varies it into different rhythmic configurations, but you feel like it's always popping up, and it's always there, and it's always really interesting to keep your ear out for that. You know, for example, you hear it in the prelude, and then you hear it right before Carmen throws her rose at Don Jose outside the cigarette factory. And then later, when he's gone to prison and he's been released from prison. He goes to prison because he helps her escape. She's in trouble. She started a fight with a girl in the cigarette factory.
That's right.
And so his commanding officer left him in charge to guard her. Of course, she sweet-talked her way out of that, and he helped her escape. And so then he had to go to prison for 2 months. But he took the rose with it. He took the rose with him to prison. And then he sings this aria when he's reunited with her. Towards the end of the second act, he sings about how he had the rose with him in prison. And of course, there again, the fate motif is played beautifully by the English horn as an introduction to that aria. And you're constantly hearing it. Later in Act 3, when Carmen consults the tarot cards to find out her destiny, again, you hear frequent sightings of the fate motif. And of course, finally, at the end, when they're fighting at the very end of the opera, you hear very dramatic interjections of the fate motif.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the music is incredibly dramatic and passionate throughout the piece. It's a really colorful score as well. fun tambourines and castanets and things that immediately evoke the sounds of Spain. Although, yeah, of course, it was written by a Frenchman, Georges Bizet. And how did he do that? How did he give us such a recognizable portrayal of this music, really?
I don't know. I think the French just, they have their ideas about what España is like. I mean, look at Charbrier writing España and Debussy writing Iberia. And it seems to be Ravel writing Rhapsody Espanol. It seems to be a fascination with the French that they feel like they have something to say about how to depict Spain in music.
That's right. Well, everyone needs to come and see what they think about that. But
yeah, perhaps they're all vacationing there, so they
perhaps so. Yeah, it, I mean, he certainly did a beautiful job. And Carmen, the opera, when it was premiered, wasn't instantly successful.
No, it's not. In fact, Bizet died. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes.
I was going to say he died within 3 months, and he never knew the success it was going to become. He died without knowing the success it would become, and he had started making revisions to the score, and there were alternative versions of the score around. So there's really not even like one clear definitive score.
Oh,
and
I see.
I think it's also, it's worth an interesting thing to mention. I'll talk about this at my Mornings with the Maestro show. When it was first written for the opera Comique, there was spoken dialogue between all the musical numbers. But then there was an adaptation done by his friend Guiraud, where Guiraud composed musical recitatives to replace the spoken dialogue. Hmm. And those are quite popular, and you often hear the opera performed with the musical recitatives, which is the version we're doing. So rather than having spoken dialogue between all the musical numbers, you actually have musical recitatives that keep the music going and keep the accompaniment from the orchestra going, and the actors keep singing. There's very few things in the opera that are spoken.
Right. I didn't actually know that, and I think that the recits are fabulous, the way the music keeps the drama rolling, and they work really well. They're not especially dry recitatives, so to speak, but they provide enough musical context for us to hear the text and go on.
And Guiraud did a good job incorporating Bizet's themes and motifs into the writings of the recitatives. Like, for example, you will hear little quotes of the fate motif sometimes in these recits. And
I noticed that a bunch of the recits start similarly. Sometimes it's just a two note and here, and then the singer goes on, or sometimes it's and then we're there. So obviously that's going to be a different, more perhaps sinister or dramatic kind of text.
Yeah.
So it was 1875 that Bizet premiered this piece, and he did get to see it premiered, but then 3 months on, as you mentioned, he had a fatal heart attack, and so he didn't see it take off in popularity. But I read that at his funeral, there were like 4,000 people in attendance, and the critics immediately praised the work as a masterpiece, and that he himself was a master, even though most of his pieces weren't given that much recognition. He wrote prolifically, but he also stopped in the middle of the project often and wouldn't complete things. So, very interesting.
It was not, you know, then when the opera was produced after his death, it was not in Paris. It wasn't until sometime in the 1880s that it actually came back to be done in Paris.
I see. But, of course, it leaves us with another favorite tune. I'll play just this little bit and listen along and see if you recognize it instantly.
Señor, señor, car avec les soldats, il est forêt, je veux s'entendre. Pour plaisir, qu'ils sont les combats.
And that, of course, was the Votre Toast of the Toreador Escamillo.
Yes, and our Escamillo does fantastic cape work. We had a wonderful choreographer working on the production, Carolina Esparza, and she worked with, of course, Carmen and her friends Frasquita and Mercedes and some of the other women in the chorus, and there's a lot of great movement, and the cape work with the Toreador is fantastic. And then we also had a fight director, Dee Granca, come in and work on the fight scenes, because there's a few fights that happen in the opera. One of my favorites is in Act One, the cigarette factory women sort of have a fight with each other. You sort of have two rival gangs fighting each other about whether Carmen or Manuelita started the fight.
Okay.
And it's really an amazing 4 minutes of music that they have to sing. I mean, it's really demanding on the choristers to sing this really fast music telling this story in French while they're also like punching each other and pulling each other's hair out and trying to get at each other, and the guards are keeping them away. And that's a scene that our fight director helped on. And of course, he helped with the dramatic end of the opera with Carmen and Don Jose. I don't want to give a spoiler alert and say too much about what happens, but it's pretty intense. And then, of course, there's the fight between Escamillo and Don Jose at one point as well, which is was a highly choreographed fight scene.
Oh, that's very cool to hear and interesting to know what goes on for the entire production. There's so much in an opera. It really is its own world in a way. And so, again, I'm here with Mark Sforzini, the director of the St. Pete Opera Company, as well as the Tampa Bay Symphony. And we're talking about his current production of Bizet's Carmen. So what is it about opera as a complete art form that so fascinated you and brought you into the conducting world here?
Hey, you know, that's a really good question. I think when I was a young bassoonist in college, and I was doing summer music festivals, I went to the Blossom Music Festival. My teacher there, David McGill, who played principal bassoon at the Cleveland Orchestra at the time, he was a huge fan of Maria Callas, the aforementioned Maria Callas we just heard singing. And he used to have us listen to her recordings, and he would point out things about her musicianship and her phrasing and how she was inflecting the music. And so I think from that young age, I sort of had a fascination with opera, and I was blessed that I had a lot of occasion to play in a lot of great operas as a bassoonist. That also stoked my enthusiasm for the art form.
Of course. I also have been enjoying performing multiple operas since moving to town and joining the Florida Orchestra, because in addition to playing with the St. Pete Opera Company of Turandot and now Carmen, as part of the Florida Orchestra, we play three or even four opera productions a year with Opera Tampa. And so it's been very cool to play La Boheme and Hansel and Gretel. And next season, they're doing Britain's Turn of the Screw, which I've played before in a festival in Italy. And it's just, it's really a wonderful art form and a treat.
Yes.
To go into these different worlds.
Yeah, and that's, you know, going back to the 90s when I was principal bassoon of the Florida Orchestra, that was when the Florida Orchestra was coming in also to play those operas in Tampa. And Judy Lisi, who had been the executive director at the Straz, she had brought in Anton Coppola to lead that building of the opera company. And he was such a impressive conductor, and I feel so fortunate to have played so many operas under his baton, and felt like every rehearsal was just like a masterclass in conducting an opera, watching Maestro Coppola do his thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. Great. I could have worked with him as well. That's beautiful. I haven't played operas in many other places, but of course they come around, and there are wonderful summer music festivals dedicated to opera here and there. I typically go off and perform in orchestra festivals during the summers, but then when I come back here, I have the mixture of things to look forward to. There's another scene from the opera, which I love. It's from, I think, near the end of the second act. It's the quintet.
Oh, yes. The quintet's a lot of fun. You get a little bit of a sense of some comic relief maybe in the opera. It's a little bit more of a lighthearted piece of music compared to some of the rest.
Right. It's very fleeting, zippy music in a way. And the first read for the orchestra was a little slippy and slidey. People are wondering, wait, where is this going? Because the music goes by so quickly. The bar line is really a very short duration. It's 6:16?
It's like a scherzo for orchestra and voices.
Yes, it is. And it's so fascinating. I want to play that because it's just such fun music.
Yeah.
I love this moment when all of the voices, the five, are doing this yep-a-dip-a-dip-a-dip thing together. Oh, man, that's so much fun. I really love that. And, boy, those ladies sang those high notes just then. Thank you, Maria Callas. What are the names of our stars for this show?
Cecil Clavery is our Carmen.
Okay.
And Don José is Peter Drackley. And his girlfriend, Micaela, is played by Elizabeth Novella. Escamillo, the bullfighter, is played by Philip Lopez. And then Carmen's female friends are Frasquita, played by Christina Marie Castro. And she's the one you would hear singing if somebody was taking a high D flat at the end of the quintet. That would be Frasquita. Because Frasquita is the high soprano in the show. Carmen is a mezzo. Mercedes can be played by a soprano or a mezzo. We have a mezzo, Jacqueline Pelekis, playing Mercedes. There are two smuggler guys that sing in the quintet also. That's Remendado, played by Chris Romeo, and Don Caera, played by David Hobbs.
Well, bravo. I just have to commend you on acing your pop quiz. Maestro Sforzini did not have any notes in front of him. He just immediately knew everyone's name, of course.
And, of course, I have to give a huge shout-out to Matt Haney, the stage director. I've so enjoyed working with Matt. This is his second production with us. He stage directed our Alcina. And it's my third production with him. When I guest conducted Macbeth at Opera Orlando in the fall, he by chance happened to be the stage director for that production. So this is our third partnership together, and I've really enjoyed watching him work. He's just brought great stuff out of the cast and great stuff to the opera. He's given sort of an interesting twist to the end of the opera that I think is really powerful.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you for giving him that shout out. It's a wonderful thing to be able to work with excellent people. And is he new to the area or something?
He's based in Texas right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So, you know, most of our people for the main stage operas travel in from out of town.
Sure, right. And so also for the cast, there are a bunch of understudies.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. And they were singing they got a chance to sing a little with the orchestra rehearsal.
It was great. They looked like they were having a blast, especially whoever was playing Carmen, singing Carmen, and she was doing the castanets and singing at the same time and just loving it. And it's a real party. Singer energy is wonderful. So in addition to all of your beautiful work with the St. Pete Opera Company, you've been the conductor of the Tampa Bay Symphony for a number of years now, right?
I think I just finished my 13th season, so I'll be starting my 14th season.
Amazing. Yeah. And I am so grateful that I've gotten to start working with the ensemble and that you brought me on as an assistant conductor for you this season. It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Well, it's great having you involved.
Yeah, it was amazing to first meet and work with the group by conducting you as a bassoon soloist. That was at the end of last season, right? It was the.
It's hard to believe that was just like a year ago. It just seems right. like so much has happened, and that was really just like a year and 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. Yeah, and when you put so much effort into a solo piece like that, as the bassoon soloist, memorizing a very non-standard concerto,
yeah.
and then coming back and conducting all of Enigma variations and delivering your eloquent speeches about the piece too, it's so much work, and yet we always look forward to the next project. But it was a treat as well to be involved recently with the composition competition. And on the recent concert, we had a beautiful world premiere of a piece. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that competition? And
So we started that, I think, 8 years ago. And one of our French horn players, Susan Ryan, had this idea that we could do some sort of call for scores competition. So she and I have been co-chairing this and sort of developing it through the years. And every year we have a different theme for what the pieces could be about. You know, when we have a very general open sort of theme, like, you know, you can write any piece you want, it just has to be between 7 and 10 minutes, then you might get like 120 submissions from like 30 countries around the world. It's like, which is wonderful, except it's a lot of pieces to evaluate.
That's
so
right.
Sometimes we're looking to kind of narrow down the applications. And so, you know, recently we had a year where we asked for flute concerti. We asked composers to write flute concertos, and we always have three finalists, and we had three flute players. So each flute player was going to take on one of the finalist pieces.
That's a cool idea.
And so we didn't get as many. We may have got 25 submissions, which was much easier to score and manage. And
that's right.
We had three finalists,
and all of those pieces were very impressive and amazing works because they were based on the Scheherazade work by Rimsky-Korsakov that you performed on that concert.
This year's competition was based on theme and variations. So
right.
I sort of went back. I went back to the previous year where we had asked for the flute concerti.
Ah, true.
And then this year we asked for the pieces to be written in the form of a theme and variations. Because I was all hot on theme and variations because we had just done Enigma variations and we had done Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, which is a theme and variations, and we had done Brahms 4, where the last movement is sort of like a series of like 28 variations or whatever. So, you know, theme and variations was on my mind. So I said, let's have theme and variations, but so the piece connects to the program we're doing that had Scheherazade on it. I asked that the theme come from Scheherazade or some other piece by Rimsky-Korsakov. So that was kind of a narrowing field too. But we got wonderful pieces, and we ended up with three finalists. And we liked two of the pieces so much, and the vote was so close, we ended up having co-winners this year. And so we just performed one of the pieces this past May, the Tale of Scheherazade, and we will do the next piece next season, The Fantastic Adventures of the Calendar Prince.
That's right.
But it's really exciting, you know, when you for the Tampa Bay Symphony, when you think about how much new music the group has helped create. You know, over these 8 years, you know, the pieces that have been written for our competition and then the finalist. And every year we have a public presentation where the three finalist pieces are rehearsed and then played through. So the pieces are getting played there, and we always perform the winner, but then we often will program some of the finalist pieces too. So we've really made a substantial commitment to new music, and it's exciting to be involved with the living art, so to speak.
That's a really wonderful thing for an organization to be crusading, in addition to performing the wonderful masterpieces like Beethoven 7 and Enigma Variations and Sibelius' First Symphony, and next year some Tchaikovsky and Dvorak.
Yes.
And it's wonderful. So tell us a little bit more about what you've got planned for next season with the Tampa Bay Symphony.
Sure. Well, next season our concert falls right around Veterans Day, so we're doing a program that's sort of a salute to the military and veterans. We're going to do an armed forces salute, the Victory at Sea, which is a piece composed about victory in the Pacific Theater in World War II. And we're going to feature one of those flute concertos with our flautist Miriam Bandaoud. It's called Montages, but it's like in a fife and drum style, so it really fits nicely into that program. And we're going to do Dvorak 8 on the second half, which is a wonderful piece, but then we're going to come back with a planned encore, Hands Across the Sea by Sousa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
One of the March Kings.
Yes. Yeah. So that's our fall program. Mm-hmm. And then in the winter, we're excited to feature our concertmaster, Jesse Munoz, who just did all the Scheherazade work. He's going to play Sibelius Violin Concerto.
Oh, boy.
Which
I can't
I've
wait
just
for
been
that.
Dying to conduct that piece and put that together with the symphony. So
excellent. Are you a big fan of Sibelius?
I am. How did you guess?
I love it. Every chance I get to play one of his symphonies or tone poems, it's great. So I can't wait to hear Jesse play that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and we're going to do also on that program a Mozart Linz symphony, which we're excited
great.
About, and Johann Strauss Jr. Emperor Waltzes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're excited about that program. And then the spring concert will feature our Young Artist Competition winner, because we do a concerto competition every year. And it will also feature that co-winner of this year's Call for Scores competition. And then Tchaikovsky 4, I'm very excited. I've not done the Tchaikovsky 4 complete yet. I've done 2, 5, and 6 with the Tampa Bay Symphony, but we have yet to do 4 since I've been there. And so really excited about doing that piece, which is also a piece about fate and destiny.
Ah, true. Back to Carmen.
Back to
and
Carmen.
That theme. Tchaikovsky certainly represents fate in a very different manner with the percussive blasting of the brass section. But that's wonderful that you get to work on so much lovely repertoire with these people. And I think of them as amateurs in the truest, most beautiful sense of the word. They love making music together. And the energy of the ensemble is infectious and really inspiring. So,
yeah. Everybody should go out and get a subscription to the Tampa Bay Symphony season as well as the St. Pete Opera season.
Yes. And I hope that people listening are interested and have learned some good things about these two organizations that you run in town. It's really a pleasure to have you with us, Maestro. So just to close up, I'm going to play one last little sweet thing from Carmen by Bizet. This is early in the opera. This is a moment from the chorus of the Street Boys, because it's just so sweet. And I think it ties back in with what you said you do with Pinocchio and your visits and education for youth, because that's such important work, right? Do you bring in singers for those and have the kids sing along or things when you go to the schools?
Yes, we take 2 professional opera singers and a pianist, as well as a facilitator, into the schools. And so the opera singers are actually performing some excerpts for the school children.
That's wonderful. I can imagine the faces of the children just going, whoa, I can't believe they were. Right? So here's just a little bit of cuteness for you all to convince you to come see this wonderful production soon. I love that music. I love the fun of it and how they're being little trumpets and whatnot. So what are the kids talking about?
So they're talking about the changing of the guards. It's time for the guards to change. And Don José and Zuniga are marching around, and they are play pretending that they're part of the guard too, and they're, you know, marching behind José and pretending like they're part of the changing of the guard.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to hear them and see them as well, and really look forward to being part of this production. So again, the Opera St. Pete is performing this piece 5 times in a row these first 2 weekends of June. So it's a Friday night, Sunday afternoon, then a Tuesday night, and another Friday night and Sunday afternoon. You can find out all the information online. It's all at the Palladium, and I really can't wait to do it. June 6th, 8th, 10th, 13th, and 15th. So thank you again very much, Maestro Mark Sforzini, for joining us on The Classical Scene via Radio St. Pete. I'm Victor Halls, and this was such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me, Victor.